We're back here on In Focus, News Radio KMAN, chatting here today with Dr. Timothy Schaefer, Associate Professor in the K-State Department of Communication Studies, also Director of the Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy. We're talking about the events of a few weeks ago here in Washington, D.C., with the insurrection at the Capitol, which, again, very shocking. I never imagined seeing that being breached, because it's one of those buildings kind of like Fort Knox. You just don't imagine it ever being broken into. But it was interesting to see not only with that, but all the stuff on social media that came about. I mean, people posting images of themselves on social media. And it was a little surprising to me that people would be so proud to do that and not thinking of the consequences there, with the FBI watching.
Yeah, they're, an interesting reality of the moment that we live in, right? That the ease at which we can and do communicate with one another and disseminate information through social media and the like, and in this situation, right, incriminating evidence is a significant kind of reality. But I think it does point to the sense of why some people were there, like truly seeing this as a kind of a just cause, something that they, the rhetorical kind of position was, they're appropriately kind of interjecting in what they saw as a fraudulent process that was not appropriate. It was, certifying the Electoral College votes for then President-elect Biden, now President Biden. And it takes us to a place of this kind of reality of how we have to navigate and acknowledge and respond to the kind of increased conspiratorial thinking that is very real. It's not purely on the fringes of society. It's increasingly kind of worked its way kind of into our institutions, whether it's political parties and the like, with real effect. And for example, at our Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy, it's all about the capacity for people to engage in communication with one another, to listen and to learn, to speak. But there are certain boundaries that we kind of play within, right? We have some ground rules that enables us to talk to each other constructively, whether that's as legislators or as citizens or whatever it might be. But if we don't have a sense of those shared beliefs and commitments, the truths of our lives, that becomes really detrimental in some significant ways. And so being able to move from this place of kind of embracing for all the appeals and reasons that kind of conspiracy theories attract, kind of wrestling with that. And we're seeing right now the kind of results of some fracturing of that, right? The kind of QAnon movement led to and inspired so much of what was going on January 6th. It led, to other moments in our recent history. But some are kind of doubling down, but many others are really kind of asking, oh my gosh, did I kind of get sucked into something that now I realize was not true, right? Why could this happen if we were being told that this wasn't going to happen, right? So we are in a moment, and some colleagues of mine in other places are really highlighting this. This is one of those moments when we can empathetically kind of reach out to family and friends who have kind of embraced this kind of conspiratorial thinking about things that are going on, right? It's appropriate to be cautious or kind of questioning of all sorts of things, but being able to do so with degrees of evidence. And if it doesn't exist, that evidence doesn't exist, then it's really hard to kind of continue to hold that position. And for us to be able to talk and work and live with one another, we need to be able to have those kind of shared agreements about, what informs our lives, our society, our governance has to be something that's founded and grounded in truth. And if we can't do that, then we've got some real, really big challenges.
Where do you stand on the issue of, outlets like Twitter and Facebook and others banning users, especially if they are spreading misinformation? Because a lot of those folks that had the loud voices that are no longer there on social media, now they go underground. Is that a little more dangerous?
Well, yeah. I mean, and this is the critique and the concern that a lot of people who kind of pay attention to what, like, say, kind of extremist language, whether we're talking about internationally or domestic, it's a lot easier when we know it's happening rather than having it be totally kind of hidden from view. There's obviously a trade there, but like the question about like speech, you know, free speech and those opportunities, free speech, our First Amendment in this country is really geared towards the government not telling people that they can't speak or what to speak. It's not about private entities. So things like Twitter and the like can have their own kind of rules. And if you break those rules, then they can very easily, as we've seen, just remove you or kind of punish you in some way. But this whole question about speech and this kind of freedom with it is so deeply ingrained in this country because we've always appropriately been cautious of the government having the ability to kind of squash dissent or other kind of perspectives, puts their responsibility on to private companies and other platforms, right? The way that you and I can speak right now, that's not the concern or the domain of the federal government. Although if all of a sudden I start saying maybe disparaging things against K-Man, I don't show up next month for all the reasons that you choose as an organization not to have somebody speak. And so we could think about it all the way from those kind of more formal settings to the really informal kind of social media and the like. And what we're experiencing now is I think the uncomfortable reality is that we have chosen to have so much of our lives shaped and grounded in certain kind of platforms through certain kind of media that it feels like if I'm not there, then it doesn't really exist. Whereas, you know, the origins of the World Wide Web were about communication, but it was not in these kind of like highly specific places where that as if that's the only place it could be, right? So the old chat rooms and the places that do and continue to exist, the kind of eclectic mix of digital communication, it's there. It's just that we have by default a few that have major roles, which is what a lot of legislators and others are looking at of like, are these major companies, are they just too big, right? And we've asked these questions in the past of this kind of monopolistic existence. And I think appropriately, we need to be asking those questions of how, you know, how do we turn over, for example, the decision-making to someone who happened to start a micro blogging website that becomes known as Twitter, right? That's a curious thing, conundrum that we're facing. And I think, and I hope that this Congress really wrestles with that, but not in a purely kind of partisan for show sort of way, right? So it's not a tit for tat because of partisanship or party, but really asking this kind of deep question, what does it mean for our public life? What is our public sphere? How do we communicate with each other when it's largely contained to a few outlets? And we've seen the effects that all of a sudden, you know, misinformation, for example, dropped, I think it was 70-some percent after President Trump kind of lost access to a major platform that would allow him to disseminate information, whether it was right or wrong, correct or incorrect. That's a huge decision, but it got made by a private company. And that's, I think, the uncomfortable reality that we're facing at this moment. It's not the government doing these things. It's because of our country's real concern about the government ever overstepping, you know, the kind of individual freedoms. But then that just turns it into decisions that a handful of people in Silicon Valley are making for all of us.
See, and I think that's a big worry among a lot of folks, because Silicon Valley, you know, political leanings largely tend to be more liberal compared to conservative, and maybe that's why so many people distrust all the social media giants and big tech.
Yeah, and as we've seen in recent days, right, the complicated nature of you know, like things like Parler emerging in some significant ways, and then all of a sudden, literally disappearing within a matter of days because of this question about is it inciting violence? Where does the free speech question come in? And if it's again relying upon certain companies, like it becomes that's what it becomes, right? I mean, if Parler ran its own servers and everything else, they could have kept doing their things, but they operated off of another web platform, and when they pulled it out, it goes away. And so this question about how and where we talk to each other is, I think, only increasingly going to become a central element to our democratic life, because the ability to disseminate information, whether true or not, the ability to communicate with one another, all of this is mediated. And the classic kind of outlets that we might be accustomed to historically are still there, but you know, so much of it really is driven by the new media, if you want to call it that, and that has repercussions for all of us. So we're appropriately confronting this at multiple levels. And I will say, just as I know we're getting short on time, is tomorrow, state legislators here in Kansas will be convening committed around this idea of civil discourse, right? So with the National Institute for Civil Discourse, our institute at K-State and others continuing to collaborate with them, really inviting and encouraging legislators to work together. And so it's not only thinking about this purely in a kind of a digital space, but in the ways, although it's really hard to think about right now, of people actually being together in the places where people are, whether it's in legislative bodies or otherwise, we need to improve this. We need to have that range of perspective, but we need to have some parameters, some guardrails that keep us from truly veering off the road so much that we're stuck in a ditch and we can't get ourselves back.
That's a good place to leave it there. We could obviously talk about this forever here, but good conversation today, Dr. Schaefer. Always appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next month.
It's great to be with you. Thanks so much.